Hi, it's Radhika Jones, Editor-in-Chief of Vanity Fair. As we gear up for award season, there's no better time to join us. By becoming a Vanity Fair subscriber, you'll gain exclusive access to our in-depth coverage of film, television, and the best of Hollywood. And that's just the beginning. Vanity Fair takes you inside the worlds of entertainment, culture, politics, and scandal, bringing you iconic images, era-defining stories, and much more. Get 15% off a year of digital access to Vanity Fair by visiting vanityfair.com and using promo code POD15 at checkout. That's vanityfair.com, promo code POD15, for 15% off a full year of insights and exclusive digital access. Subscribe now.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to Little Gold Men, the podcast that strives to make you believe that award season really is a year-round affair. I'm Vanity Fair Digital Director Mike Hogan. I'm here with our film critic, Richard Lawson.
Hello.
And senior writer, Joanna Robinson.
Hello.
Patching in from the Bay Area. Hi, guys.
Hi.
We have a very exciting show today. I feel very privileged to be sitting at a table with one of the most hated men in superhero fandom, Richard Lawson, whose Suicide Squad review has touched off quite a controversy, storm of controversy.
Yeah, my Twitter mentions are sort of a horror show. I mean, actually, it's dissipated a little bit, but last night it was like, ugh.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about Woody Allen's new movie, Cafe Society, and what to do when someone you have a lot of problems with personally keeps making Oscar-y movies and how everybody deals with that. But first, we are going to kick off with some Oscar news items that Richard is going to share with us. And I'm excited because they're apparently about Brad Pitt.
Yeah. So, you know, when we talked about the Toronto lineup, you know, we were saying that that really helps give shape to the Oscar season. But obviously there are other festivals. There's the New York Film Festival. Well, that's the one after Toronto. And there are other movies that don't play festivals. So today we got a little bit of news about two of those movies. The first is Allied, this Robert Zemeckis movie with Brad Pitt and Marion Cotillard about, and Lizzie Kaplan and Matthew Good. It's a good cast. About a spy who falls in love with a French resistance fighter in North Africa during World War II. And then it's kind of a romance thriller kind of a thing. And it's Zemeckis, so you'd imagine there's some spectacle to it as well. They just released like some first images from it. And I had kind of honestly, that movie had not been on my radar at all. But if you look at the cast and the director, and Zemeckis has directed, you know, like Denzel Washington got nominated for Flight, Tom Hanks for Castaway, Forrest Gump, obviously. So Zemeckis actually has a pretty good history at the Oscars.
Yeah.
So I don't think we should count that out, even if it's more of a thriller than it is, you know, a serious drama. So that's exciting. And then the other bit of news is that The Lost City of Z, which is an adaptation of a nonfiction book about explorers in South America in, I believe, the late 1800s, perhaps early 1900s. I read it, but I forget. Anyway, big star-studded cast, directed by James Gray, who made The Immigrant that Marion Cotillard was nominated for an Oscar for. Oh, no, excuse me. She was going to be nominated for an Oscar for that, but then ended up a different movie. But that movie was very well received by critics a couple years ago. And this is a big kind of period epic drama that's going to close out the New York Film Festival. It was just announced today.
Wow.
So that could be a big deal. That could be a new player, I think, in the Oscar landscape.
Brad Pitt, nominated for Moneyball, for Benjamin Button.
For 12 Monkeys
for 12
years
Monkeys.
Ago. Yeah. So
three times to the dance and still hasn't worn the crown or whatever.
Yep.
I'm not sure how that metaphor
can we
works.
Anticipate that at least the Hollywood Foreign Press Association would invite him to the Golden Globes, because if they're going to nominate Angelina Jolie for The Tourist, they're going to take any opportunity to nominate Brad Pitt.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, I think that's a given. I think
that does sound pretty like much like a given. Although hasn't the kind of Hollywood Foreign Press sort of become a little less thirsty in recent years? It seems like lately they've been a little bit more kind of self-conscious about not doing the cheesy thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think also the year that The Tourist happened with Angelina Jolie, like I think it was just kind of a weird year for comedy musical movies. And so they just were like, eh, sure, here you go. And I think there's just been maybe a little bit more competition in that arena lately.
Yeah.
So.
And we should maybe note that in terms of Golden Globe news, they just announced that Jimmy Fallon will be hosting this year instead of Ricky Gervais. So that's something to look forward to.
Yeah, we can look forward to some weird, some fun games on stage.
Yeah. you know, Europeans love games.
They sure
I don't
do.
Know, do they?
Lip syncing. You have to lip sync your acceptance
I wonder
speech.
If he'll do like his Neil Young impersonation or something. You
know? Or Bee Gees or something.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot that he could do, which is exciting. And probably it won't involve him walking out cheekily with a beer like Ricky Gervais. So
probably a change up. It is funny. I mean, he's a pretty nice guy. Mm-hmm. That's a big turn from Ricky.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Yeah, totally. That's a more like fun show, like let's celebrate everybody and not like let's tear down the industry.
Yeah. I wonder if he was their first choice.
I mean, they asked me, but I have, obviously my responsibilities are to this podcast.
Thank you for that.
No, that's a good question. I would guess so, just because the Tonight Show is so popular. He's so viral, you know. Mm-hmm. I think that, and he skews young, so maybe that was kind of the thinking there.
And I mean, if they want to try to recapture some of the Amy and Tina vibe, you know, he and Tina spent all that time on the Weekend Update desk together. It's sort of a return to that SNL hosty sort of thing.
Yeah, it seems like, now that you mention it, it seems very likely that we'll see some Tina and Amy cameo there.
I would hope so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I should hope so.
They're sorely missed, so.
They are.
Amal is a human rights lawyer who worked on the Enron case, was an advisor to Kofi Annan regarding Syria, and was selected for a 3-person UN commission investigating rules of war violations in the Gaza Strip. So tonight, her husband is getting a Lifetime Achievement Award.
Okay. Well, enough stalling. Let's talk about your Suicide Squad review.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
I remember lines such as, this is a bad movie. Not bad in a good way. Not bad. And I'm just quoting from memory, but you really hated this movie.
Yeah. You know, I saw it earlier this week and, you know, there's no reason to be angry if you get to go see a movie in the middle of a work day, you know, mm-hmm. and I did. And so I should at least be not take that for granted. But
have some popcorn. Yeah, enjoy yourself,
but,
Richard.
But I got out of this movie and I was like, that movie just ruined my day. And I came home because there was a turnaround time with like the way that the embargo worked, and so I had to kind of get the review written quickly, and which is fine. I think sometimes that's actually the best way to do a review, but it kind of like festival style. Yeah,
but and the words just flew out of you
as if I sort of went into a fugue state.
Yeah,
and, I just channeled.
And when
a lot
you finished, your nose was bleeding.
Right, exactly. Uh-huh. It was very. The lights flickered, and Winona Ryder started crying. Yeah. It was. Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, I would say that there has been a mounting sort of frustration with superhero movies that really sort of cracked with this, you know, and I think that this is a just movie for it to sort of to get the kind of lion's share of that, because it really is kind of a gross movie, but it just kind of represents a lot of things I'm just sick of with superhero movies, I would say.
But I mean, would you make a distinction at all between the Marvel brand and the Warner Brothers brand? Because for me, I'm seeing Suicide Squad Friday. I'm going in with no expectations whatsoever because I've been burned by DC and Warner Brothers before with Batman v Superman, and I didn't even like Man of Steel. But I'm still looking forward to Marvel movies. So does that distinction work for you, or is it just general superhero fatigue?
Well, I mean, lest I get accused again, which I have been accused of now hundreds of times in the past day, of being in Marvel's pocket, as many critics have been.
Yes, yes.
And the people who are really entrenched on either side of this kind of fanboy divide really have a trouble not seeing the rest of the world as this binary. It's like, I don't actually have allegiance to either one. My only allegiance is that the Marvel movies just are better.
Right.
They're just, you know, whatever.
You can say that. You feel like you can say
and
that.
And that's all I mean. I don't mean that, you know, Marvel bought you a Lamborghini or anything like that, but just sort of.
No, it was an Audi.
Well, yeah. I mean, something we talked about Comic-Con last week, but a really clever observation someone made that was not me is that Warner Brothers keeps having to go to Comic-Con being sort of starting from scratch, saying, we'll do it right this time. We promise. We got it this time. I'm sorry about the last one, but we got it. Whereas Marvel is just coasting on hit after hit after hit. And they're like, we know you like what we do. We're just going to keep doing it. Let's go. So, I mean, it's just a real divide in these two studios trying to lift up all this comic book history, you know, so.
And I think, you know, the Marvel success is a testament to, like, you have to build the foundation of the house well. And they did with, you know, Iron Man all the way back in 2008. They just, and then with Joss Whedon kind of doubling up on that with the Avengers, they built, it's a well-built house, and they can redesign rooms in whatever way they want, and it still works. DC just has not, and Warner Brothers just have struggled from the beginning to establish anything, because they had these wonderful Christopher Nolan Batman movies that were so good, but they weren't enough to build a sort of huge franchise on, because they're so dark and serious, and it's not, you know. So they've tried to kind of add fun into the dark and serious vibe, and it just doesn't work. And with Suicide Squad in particular, it's just this kind of gleeful but weirdly boring violence that, like, right now in American society, loving shots of a table full of machine guns is not, like, really, yeah, what I don't think anyone wants, or at least I don't want.
Right.
That was a phrase from your review. I think you used the phrase gun worship that sort of stopped me in my tracks. Yeah. I was like, yeah, I don't know that I even want to see this movie. I will, but I don't know that I want to. And it's really interesting to me, the different takes. And what I think an issue with Warner Brothers, I say all of this having not seen Suicide Squad yet, an issue with Warner Brothers is they have the more famous superheroes. They have Batman and Superman. So I think they thought they didn't have to build that foundation because they already had it. They've got the most famous capes, you know, but they right. were.
Yeah. I mean, the Marvel superheroes in comparison were kind of budget, you know, until this
right.
past yeah. run of 10 years.
Like, it was sort of years. Laughable that there would be a Thor movie before there was a Thor movie.
Yeah.
You were like, really? And now they're going to be
Captain America was yeah. definitely the wackest superhero.
Oh, yeah. Like, totally square and boring and, you yeah. know.
But now but the tables have been turned.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that Suicide Squad reveals also, you know, someone on Twitter or something yesterday was like, DC has the best villains. And it was like, if those are the best villains, like, there's like one guy who's just like Boomerang Man. And he has an Australian accent and a boomerang. And it's like, really, guys?
Excuse me, it's
million
Captain Boomerang. Get it right.
Excuse me. Yeah, Captain Boomerang.
And what about the actors? Because one of the things that you said that I thought was interesting was that, you know, the actors are kind of ill-served by this material,
oh,
which,
yeah.
which happens. Like, we see that. They're all sure. at the mercy of, at some level, the director, the studio, whatever it's going to be. So, and there's some kind of Oscar-y actors in this movie.
Oh, for sure.
Cashing a check, so no one's going to feel bad for them. But what was your sense of how they were ill-served by this, by the film?
Well, yeah, I would say at the top of the heap in terms of actors are Viola Davis, Will Smith, and Margot Robbie. And I guess Jared Leto, too. I mean, he's a smaller part as the Joker. But he's an Oscar winner. Viola Davis and Will Smith are both Oscar nominees. Margot Robbie is sure to be at some point in her career. They're all really talented. And I can see why all of them agreed to do this movie, at, well, you know, years ago when they were signing the deal, because
right.
it sounds fun. It's villains kind of, you know,
yeah.
tearing through the city and being bad. And then Viola Davis is this really kind of corrupt, ethically dubious government official who assembles this team of rogues. You know, it made sense.
Right.
But,
and a cool, diverse cast.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. Margot Robbie yeah. with the opportunity to kind of give life to a character that's a kind of a fan sort of
yeah.
dark horse favorite or whatever you want to call it. Like mm-hmm. not Batman or Superman, but somebody who really could be seemingly a big female superhero. Hence the fact that they greenlit the movie for her, which we can also talk about.
Yeah.
So anyway, go on.
Yeah, no. So, it all makes sense. And then, and I think, you know, even though I'm not the biggest fan of the director and writer, David Ayer, there are plenty of people who are, and he made, you know, the movie End of Watch with Jake Gyllenhaal, the
yeah, which
LA
I like
Cops
a lot.
Movie. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Fury with Brad Pitt, the tank movie. And, you know, so on paper, it all makes sense, but somewhere in the execution, maybe it had to do with these kind of reshoots that people have talked about. And after Batman vs. Superman kind of critically tanked and sort of box office didn't do that well, they went in for reshoots, and the rumor is that they tried to make it more funny, Suicide Squad, you know. So I think that just everything got jumbled, and you can see Will Smith and Viola Davis and Margot Robbie really struggling to find their footing in it, you know.
Yeah.
And I do for a little while. I mean, they're good performances, you know. These are good
right.
actors.
Sure.
It's just that, like, they get lost ultimately in this kind of muddle. And then the Joker, I didn't really, the marketing materials for the movie don't really prepare you for the fact that this is really just a kind of introduction to him, and it's a setup for him to be in a bigger role in another movie.
Right.
So we don't see even that much of Jared Leto's, you know, famous kind of method
yeah.
stuff.
Well, last time we talked about how, you know, Marvel has kind of figured out one version of this, and Warner Brothers seems to be experimenting more by bringing in auteurs, you know, doing different types of stuff because they can't do what Marvel does. Marvel's kind of, you know, taken ownership of that style. But so what now? If this is the second one in a row that's not working, they go dark, they go heavy, whatever it is, and it doesn't land, what can Warner Brothers do now?
Well, I don't know. What about you, Joanna? Do you see any viable path forward for DC? Can they build a cinematic universe that works going forward?
I know it's sort of a fool me once, shame on you sort of thing. And I feel like this is fool me three times. But I'm still optimistic about Patty Jenkins' Wonder Woman. That looks good to me. And I think partially because it leans into that thing that Marvel does do so well. Wonder Woman is sort of the Captain America of this. Superman should be the Captain America of this franchise, but Zack Snyder had other ideas for him and decided to go really dark. But it seems like they're making Wonder Woman into this virtuous, strong, stalwart hero, which optimism in our comic book movies is, I think, something America is looking for. And so the darkness of Suicide Squad, which David Ayer, every time he talks about it, is just reveling in how dark it is. And the same with the darkness in Batman v Superman, I don't think is really flying with people outside the DC loyal fan base. Now, that being said, they're trying to do Justice League lighter. They're pinning a lot of their hopes on Ezra Miller's character, The Flash, because who's now going to be in Wonder Woman, because he's the quote-unquote funny one. So they're trying to inject this lightness in and I think get closer to Marvel, even as they protest that they're not. And I don't know if that weird hybrid of tone is going to work for them, but that's, I think, what they're trying to do.
Yeah, and that Wonder Woman trailer is pretty great. So hopefully that means, but you know, I liked the trailer for Suicide Squad. So,
right.
Well, and the last thing on this topic that I want to ask about is the Harley Quinn movie. Now, what does this mean? Does this spell disaster for that, or can that be a complete reboot and be fine?
I mean, to me, I don't know really the ins and outs of how the sort of economics of this work, but to me, you know, other reviews I've read, other kind of reactions on Twitter, people genuinely seem to like her.
Yeah.
And like the performance, right, and like the character, and think that she's, worth more. So,
right.
So yeah, I think that probably, look, I took the subway home after the movie with David Sims, who writes for The Atlantic, and he was like, oh, this movie's going to make a ton of money. He's like, it's going to do so well.
Yeah.
And I think he's probably right. At least it will do really,
whatever. It's critic proof at some level.
Yeah. So I think that she's
and it may be the Donald Trump of movies, mm-hmm, where we all hate it, but it's speaking to, you know, an audience that's not coastal elite people. I don't know.
Right. Well, and also during the movie, it did yell at a baby they said get a baby out of the room or whatever. This is going to be a dated joke.
Get the baby out of here.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. I think unless you've heard otherwise, Joanna, I think that all lights are still green for that movie.
I thought it was still sort of questionable, not entirely greenlit yet, but very close. And I agree with everyone that if anything's going to come forward out of this, it's going to be Margot Robbie. I agree. This movie is going to make a lot of money, but I think like Batman v Superman, we will see a drop between weeks because it's going to have a huge opening weekend, but I predict a drop, not as precipitous as Batman v Superman, but the reviews are almost worse for this than they were for Batman v Superman, I think. So I don't know how much legs this will have, I guess.
A friend of mine asked me after I saw Suicide Squad, he's like, well, how does it compare to Batman v Superman? And I said, Batman vs Superman looks like the cherry orchard next to Suicide Squad. So,
oh my God.
Yeah, I don't know. Word of mouth is going to be tough for this one.
Well, I'm hoping to get on the poster with the Donald Trump of movies.
Oh, yeah.
I want to let all the publicists know out there, we don't win anymore, folks. Okay.
Behold the voice of God.
For those of you who don't know me officially, my name is Amanda Waller.
There's an event in Midway City. I want you to enter the city, rescue HVT-1, and get them to safety.
I'm sorry, for those of us who don't speak good guy, what is HVT-1?
The only person that matters in the city, the one person you can't kill. Complete the mission, you get time off your prison sentence. Fail the mission, you die.
Anything happens to Colonel Flagg, I'll kill every single one of you. Remember, I'm watching.
I see everything.
There's your pep talk. So that's it? What, we some kind of Suicide Squad? I'll notify your next of kin.
So Cafe Society, which is Woody Allen's latest effort, which had a big splashy premiere at Cannes amidst controversy, personal controversy for Woody Allen, has now opened wide this last weekend in the United States. And I decided I wanted to see it. This would be the first Woody Allen movie I saw since Midnight in Paris, I believe. And I decided I wanted to see it just because I really love Kristen Stewart and Jesse Eisenberg, and I wanted to see what was happening. But I felt weird about supporting Woody Allen because I have a very strong emotional negative response to a lot of his personal, his comments in his personal life. And so I decided to buy a second ticket for Star Trek Into Darkness and slip into the Cafe Society theater so that I could watch the movie without giving him my $10 or what have you. And I did.
Hero.
Not even-
you are a hero.
A modern day Robin Hood.
Yes.
And sad to say, I didn't even like the movie. Like, I hated the movie. And so I was glad that I hadn't paid my money and compromised my morals by seeing it. But I had compromised my morals just by even going at all, I guess, is how I felt. But I was wondering if you guys grapple with a similar thing. Richard, I know you're on ground zero at Cannes, both of you, while all of this was sort of happening. So what are your thoughts on this movie and the Woody Allen legacy?
Well, I think what I noticed at Cannes when Cafe Society was premiering, and you know, there was all these Dylan Farrow article or Ronan Farrow article had dropped the day that day, and is that, you know, in years past, while we all sort of were aware of these accusations, there was kind of like well, what are you going to do? And that, well, what are you going to do, has like dissipated by Cannes this year. Like, it was a lot harder to kind of be like, you know, and so a lot, there were, you know, and I think that's good. I mean, you know, it takes a while for people to come around on these things. And so I think watching Cafe Society in Cannes, which has a great cast and it's a fun story, you're half of your mind, if not more, is sort of just like, what is everyone doing in this movie? And what are we doing here? You know,
yeah,
it's harder to kind of go, you know, cover your ears and go la la la, because this story just keeps growing.
Yeah, it's true. And you just think, how do actors keep taking the role? And it's not, actors aren't responsible for anything that Woody Allen has done in his life,
or for litigating it,
or you know, and but you do sort of wonder, like, if we're uncomfortable buying a $15 ticket, you know, what kind of conversations do people have to have with themselves to say, am I going to make this project? You know, I think for a long time, frankly, it was seen as a very, like, an express train to the Dolby Theater or whatever you want to call it, you know, and Cate Blanchett is the last person who did that successfully. I think, you know, a lot of the recent controversy erupted in the middle of that Oscar race, and I think you saw Cate Blanchett really distance herself during that race. She was not showing up places with Woody Allen. And I think that, you know, it really creates a sticky situation. I mean, there's just a weird, you know, it feels like it's not quite Bill Cosby level, obviously, but I mean, it's close enough that it's uncomfortable.
Yeah,
and I think the Bill Cosby scandal breaking wide the way it did puts a different spin on the Woody Allen thing, because people are so inclined to give Woody Allen the benefit of the doubt because there seems to be a gray area there for him that people were inclined to give Bill Cosby the benefit of the doubt, and then the gray area just disappeared. And so people don't want to be on the wrong side of history with Woody Allen, I think, learn their lesson from Bill Cosby. And I want to say that, of course, I was completely wrong. Of course I saw Blue Jasmine. I don't know what I was thinking. Of course I saw that. So I keep feeding the Woody Allen machine, you know, myself. Isn't that one of the biggest, strongest points that Dylan Farrow made, where she called out his various collaborators like Emma Stone or Diane Keaton, and she said, how can you do this knowing what you know about what happened to me? And I thought that was one of the stronger sort of arguments she could have made, but it's still sort of rolling off the backs of a lot of Hollywood actors who want to work with the legend that is Woody Allen. So
yeah, it's incredibly sad. And of course, you know, Diane Keaton coming out and giving him, what was that big Lifetime Achievement Award that she gave him?
Oh, I don't remember.
So
was that
the Globes,
she sang the Girl Scouts,
wasn't it?
Song?
It was the Golden Globes. And she sang the song. Yeah. I mean, on the one hand, it's like nobody could be a better kind of character witness for Woody Allen than Diane Keaton. On the other hand, that in itself was kind of creepy.
Yeah.
And Yeah, it's just it's just strange. And I say this as someone who, you know, Annie Hall and Manhattan are like two of my favorite movies of all time. But even then, you can't watch those movies and not notice things. You go, there's something really weird going on with this guy.
Yeah.
And it just gets weirder as time goes on.
Yeah. And there's weird stuff in, you know, in Cafe Society. You know, I think there's that one incredibly vulgar and just unnecessary scene with the prostitute, where basically the scene ends with the prostitute begging Jesse Eisenberg to sleep with her. And when it's a transactional,
so uncomfortable,
you know, and it's just like, he doesn't, none of this sort of swirl of his controversy of his personal life seems to have, there's no thought in his movies about it. There's no, he does no grappling with it. And I mean, in the same way that Roman Polanski hasn't grappled with any of his stuff, you know, so I guess you can't blame them for that, but it's also, it makes watching them increasingly, I mean, Cafe Society, I was sort of like, I don't know if I want to do this again. You know?
Right. Yeah.
Right. I mean, watching Steve Carell and Kristen Stewart, like I have had enough of the older man, younger women romances and Woody Allen movies that just seem, as you say, completely unaware, like without a trace of irony. And I would be interested in Woody Allen exploring some of these themes. That would be really interesting to me because he is obviously a smart, thoughtful person. But as you say, I mean, he has said himself that he doesn't read any of the things that are written about him or said about him. And whether or not that's true, that sort of deflective shield he's put up has blocked him artistically from engaging in the conversation. So
you think you'd actually rather see a film that honestly grappled with this whole, with this thing, rather than what tends to happen in his films, are there these little kind of glancing references that almost make everything worse.
Yeah. I mean, wouldn't you watch a Woody Allen movie where he really, really confronts this whole thing? I mean, yeah. Even if it's just a train wreck, wouldn't you buy tickets? I would legitimately buy tickets to that
train
wreck,
ticket?
Not
you'd
Star
give him,
Trek
you'd give
tickets.
Him the, you'd give him the money for that.
I would, if he were that honest. If he were brave enough to be that honest with what's going on around him, yes, I would.
So my one regret in life is that I can't play an instrument.
I used to date a musician.
Did you?
A sax player, very brilliant. Mm. He'd play those sad songs with so much feeling.
That's a great gift.
I would have married him, but he was a dope addict.
Really? No, see, I don't like dope. It messes you up.
Well, I tried it a few times when I was with him.
Did you?
Yeah, we smoked reefers, and I even tried opium once.
Look at you. What was the, I'm curious, what was the effect?
Oh, I didn't like it. No, I don't have an addictive personality.
That's
he
good.
Did. Yeah.
Oh.
But muggles made me feel sexy.
Sorry, muggles?
The reefers.
But you call them muggles?
He did.
So you married a musician?
I married a stockbroker.
Well, it doesn't seem terribly likely that Cafe Society is going to be a big contender in the best original screenplay race this year.
No.
But a few years ago, Midnight in Paris, Woody Allen won the Oscar. He didn't show up. He doesn't really show up. Why doesn't he show up again? Does anybody remember?
I
think, didn't they do like an ode to New York after 9/11 and he was part of the video? But I think that's the last time he's done anything Oscar wise.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, Midnight in Paris by Woody Allen beat The Artist, which I think is ridiculous because there was no words in it. Bridesmaids by Kristen Wiig and Annie Mumolo. Margin Call by J.C. Shandor, and A Separation by Asghar Farhadi. And can somebody pronounce the name of the guy who wrote The Artist? Because I skipped it because I'm afraid to say it.
Oh, Michel Hazavicius.
Great pronunciation.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, I used to be able to pronounce that. During that Oscar season, I could say that last name.
Oh, yeah. There's always like two or three names you have to learn every Oscar season.
And then it's gone and then, the morning after.
Michel Hazanavicius.
Anyway.
So what do we think? Joanna? When I raised this earlier today, I got the feeling you might stand by this win.
I mean, I love Midnight
and we're not,
in Paris.
And I want to just clarify, this is not a moral, we're not talking about morality here. We're just going to try to separate that and just say, what's the best screenplay?
Yeah, I do. I love Midnight in Paris. I quote it a lot. Like,
I quote The Artist all the time. Sorry.
Like the barking noise. Anything that that Corey Stahl as Ernest Hemingway said in Midnight in Paris, I quote a lot. I really love that movie. I hate that I love that movie, but I do. If I were to give it to anything else, it would actually probably be Bridesmaids because that kicked off something. And I think a lot of what it kicked off is right there in the script in terms of the way women are allowed to be in comedies. But I would stick by Midnight in Paris. Yeah.
It's funny. My least favorite part of Midnight in Paris is the Ernest Hemingway thing. I don't know why. It just drives me nuts. I just didn't buy it.
It really is like they died in the mud and the dirt. And he's speaking these like short like sentences. That's my favorite Corey Stahl performance too. So.
Okay. Well, it might actually be. Never mind. Okay. Go on. Richard, what do you think?
I think it's such a weird year. That's what I was saying to you guys before we recorded. Like, yeah. It's just like, I mean, a silent movie. Yeah. A foreign language movie, which they almost never get nominated for screenplay awards, you know.
Yeah.
So
and a giant comedy
and
with
a giant comedy
poop scene,
yeah,
like
with
a
huge
pooping scene,
diarrhea scene. So what a weird year, but that's kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
No, I would give it to somebody else. I would probably give it to A Separation, to Oscar Farhadi. I mean, that movie won the best foreign language Oscar that year, so it didn't go home empty-handed. But it's such a fantastic movie, and you know, when you talked, when you talk to sort of international cinephiles at something like Cannes, that movie remains like it's held in such high regard among that kind of scene that I think it's a special piece of art, and I think that it would have been a nice win.
I mean, to me, the artist just feels like a stunt nomination, and it's a pretty great one. I'm still having fun making really bad jokes about it right now.
The script is only 5 pages.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, and Bridesmaids, I mean, I love Bridesmaids. I saw it again recently, and I really do think it's so smart and good, but it doesn't feel like an Oscar thing to me.
Right.
Margin Call, I want to go back and watch Margin Call.
I
enjoyed it a lot. It feels a little like Vegetables right now, as does The Separation, let's face it.
Yeah, totally. And I also think that J.C. Shandor, you know, I wrote about his movie after, or two movies after Margin Call, which for VF, which was A Most Violent Year.
Yeah.
And I kind of looked at those three movies, All Is Lost, Margin Call, and Most Violent Year, as kind of like a weird little trilogy, because his father was a big Merrill Lynch executive. So he has this very conflicted relationship with big finance.
Yeah.
And I think that Margin Call, while a really interesting, compelling movie, it's a little bit like at the kind of the height of the crash, it's kind of a little forgiving of them.
Yeah, it's apologist.
Really?
I think it is apologist. And as you mentioned with the vegetables, it's hard to go back and eat those vegetables when you have something like The Big Short, which is like the meat and the veg, right? Like you have
with
a similar
dessert.
Examination that they found a way to spice up in a way. So
I don't know, guys. I kind of think it would be awesome if Bridesmaids had an Oscar.
Yeah.
I'm just going to throw my Oscar at them.
All right, I can get behind that.
Hey, buddy.
Hey.
How you doing?
I'm good. I'm so much more relaxed. Thank you, Helen. I just feel like I'm excited and I feel relaxed and I'm ready to party with the best of them. And I'm gonna go down to the river.
Wow, it looks like somebody's really relaxing now.
Yeah, wow. What are you guys talking about up here?
Well, thanks for joining us on this special hate-filled edition of Little Gold Men. We are happy to brighten your afternoon or whatever time of day it is that you're reading this. You can follow all of our work on vanityfair.com. Please follow Little Gold Men on Twitter. And please follow everybody on Twitter. I'm at Mike_Hogan. Richard.
I'm at Rylaws.
Joanna.
Joe wrote this.
This episode was produced by Sam Dingman and edited by Tim Einenkel. As always, we thank Laura Mayer and Andy Bowers of Panoply for all that they do. And the award for most tear-stained page from Reince Priebus's diary goes to Joanna.
We'll do it right this time. We promise. We got it this time.